Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Richard Osborne and the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. Welcome to the first episode of the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. My name is Richard Osborne, and I'll be your host for this podcast, or hopefully in the future it won't just be me and not just me sitting talking on my own in a room in the south of France, like a bit of a weirdo with people looking at me from the street thinking, I guess maybe they'll be thinking I'm on a conference call or something, or I can say I'm on a video lesson with a student or something. I guess it won't be that bad, but really should be doing this with other people at some point. I wanted to start the first episode today talking about an issue that has come up in one of my learner evaluations today. I had a woman who is going to start doing training with a colleague of mine, and I was doing the level tests before she starts her training. And she brought up a really typical point that I guess is not talked about enough. And this is, you know, I guess I could start every episode talking about how there's not enough literature out there, or not enough training out there, or certification out there that takes into consideration these things that I talked about in the LinkedIn article. I'll put a link under the podcast, which I think make the difference between expert language trainers, who are people who really know what they're doing, who really understand quite well the whole training game, as opposed to somebody who has a sort of envie for travel, and they've landed in a country and they want to find something to do. They don't speak the language, and so they get a job as an English trainer or as a language trainer, and they don't maybe develop themselves to discover a bit more about the job that they're doing. They just do the job. You know, you can easily do the job of a language trainer without anybody ever knowing that you're not really a language trainer. If you consider that being really a language trainer is to have some sort of qualification, have read some sort of research, some sort of literature on what it is to learn a language, what it takes, what can break it, what can make it, what can break it, basically. If you're just using your native tongue to speak to somebody and hoping that they'll learn that language, well, you know, they could get that service by going to, you know, a touristy bar and just striking up a conversation with a tourist. So you're not really doing anything more than what they could do on their own for free. If you want to actually make them pay for something, like an expert language trainer does, you know, properly pay for training, then that training should deliver something that's guaranteed by an expertise, by an understanding of what training is. So the first point that I wanted to bring up this morning was, like I said, about this test that I had, where this lady who I was testing was explaining how she was at a beginner level. She really had difficulty putting sentences together. She would really like to be able to speak for holidays. She doesn't use her English in her job. And I think that's a really typical example of somebody who wants to learn English. There are so many people out there who just want to improve their English because they know that they're going to go on holiday one day and they're going to need to use that language. Now, I can tell you, so anecdotally, from my own case, I know that that is a kind of an impossible situation to be in, because you know that one day you're going to go and use the language that you want to learn in a country. So say I, you know, for example, me, that's telling my own story, when I got married, I married somebody who was German speaking, who spoke English, but all of her family spoke German and they didn't speak English. So there was that looming possibility of I'm going to have to go to Germany and speak to these people, or they're going to come to my wedding, or I'm going to go to a birthday or whatever, and they're going to speak to me in German. So what am I going to do? I'm going to have to learn German. So I went through that process. That's why I'm a teacher, but I also know it from the learner's side. And I think a lot of people listening, if you're an expert language trainer, it's because you live in a country where you learn the language. So you probably know what I'm talking about a little bit. You know, when you're in the country, the need for the language is immediate and gives this kind of what we call intrinsic motivation. So motivation that really comes from an internal place. It's not somebody telling you what to do or the promise of a promotion or something like that. It's internally you desire to do this. You know, you have something you need to do that's coming from a desire or a basic need. And so you don't need to trick your brain into doing it. You just do it. It's, you know, I always like to make the example of somebody who wants to get fit. And there's a big difference between people who just want to get fit because they know that they need to be healthy and they know that one day it's going to matter and one day, you know, they're going to extend their life or not by deciding to do this training, this fitness training. There's a big difference between that, which is, I guess, kind of like most of the people in the world who sit and say, oh, yeah, I really need to go to the gym. I really should work out. Oh, I've got jogging shoes. I should really put them on and go running. And they never do it. Or they do it a little bit and then give up. Or people who, you know, you're training to run a marathon, or you've got a new job that's quite physical, or your kid has started playing sports and you want to play with them. So there's that immediate need that gets that intrinsic motivation going. Not that future sort of external thing, but that intrinsic, that internal motivation, where you have this incredible drive to do it, and kind of you don't really have a choice. You know, you have to do it, or else you're you know, something immediate in your life will be affected by that. So that difference, I think, is really analogous to language training, because language training in itself, just in isolation, is quite laborious, as going to the gym is. You know, actually training yourself to speak a language, the process that you go through, there's a lot of mistakes, you're struggling, you're making an effort to make new sentences and to make new ideas. And so it's not a fun process. I don't think anybody in the world could say, oh yeah, I really love sitting in a classroom and not knowing what to say and then being told what to say and then being able to say it. Yeah, there's at the end of the class, there's a feeling of achievement, and you go away thinking, yeah, I crushed that class, that was great, you know, I showed that teacher what for, I really spoke, you know, using the words that they give, and yeah, I feel really successful. Or you go away thinking, oh god, that was really tough, you know, and I really don't understand the present perfect, I'm going to have to work on that. So, you know, there's a whole process, but the actual sitting in the classroom going through it, that's the bit that nobody wants to do. If I could tell you today, yeah, okay, they've invented that Matrix thing that you saw in the movie where they just inserted a disc into the guy's brain and boom, he learned it in 20 seconds. So you get that great feeling of achievement without having to go through the work. You know, if I could tell you, all right, I'm just gonna inject your muscles and they'll increase in size, and or I'll, you know, inject you with something and it'll take away your dad bod and you know, return you to your once thin form without all the effort, I mean, obviously you're going to do it. You're not going to be like, oh, no. I actually really want to go to the gym. I actually really like going in there and sweating and, you know, looking at the time and praying that it's going to accelerate and trying to get to the end of the hour and a half so I can just get out and get some lunch. You know, that's just, that doesn't exist. So don't pretend that it does. So don't pretend, first of all, that language training, what we do as expert language trainers, don't pretend that what we do in itself in isolation is fun. The thing that we do that's fun is the engagement on a social level that we have with our learners. It's that we walk into a classroom and people want to get to know us because we've got quite an interesting story, and we're interested in them because it's kind of our job to be interested in them. We know that we're going to motivate them to speak if we show an interest in their lives and what they do, their jobs. So from the get-go, an English class or a language class, sorry for anybody who's teaching other languages, a language class with an expert language trainer is always, no matter how funny you are, it doesn't, you know, I've had people in the past say to me, oh, but I'm not really a funny person, I'm not really an extrovert, or I'm not very social or whatever as a teacher. And you don't need to be. It's you're bringing your personality. You are a person who, I imagine you have friends. Yeah, I have one or two, I guess. You know, some people like you, you know, there must be something about you that appeals as a person, no matter how much you have a self-esteem issue or whatever, there's something about you that appeals, or else you wouldn't be a language trainer, because nobody would want to be in the same room with you for more than 10 minutes. You know, there's something about you that's nice, that's friendly, that's interesting, that's, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a bit more serious or a bit more fun or whatever. There's something about you that's nice that people like. You know, just by the fact that you're doing your job and you're listening to this means that there's something about you that's attractive as a person, right? So the fun thing about your training is that you are there and that you are talking with this person on a social level about their lives, about their jobs and whatever. So that sort of masks, a bit like Zumba, you know, when you go and you listen to the funky music and you dance around or whatever, it helps mask the pain that you're going through. And so, yeah, you sitting in a class and being nice to somebody and being friendly with someone masks the embarrassment of not being able to say what you want, the frustration of being stuck on words, of translating in your head and all that stuff. So, coupled with the content that you're delivering, so you're delivering interesting videos, YouTube videos, TED videos, they're about subjects that interest the learner because you've personalized it. All of those things help to mask in isolation, what it is to learn a language, which is just frustration and stress. So that's the job of an expert language trainer. Why am I talking about that? I will always come round back to where I started, and you know, it'll all make sense. So just keep going. I know you've been listening to this now for a good, 10 minutes? Yeah. And you're probably currently in the gym. That's where I listen to podcasts. You're probably standing in the gym on the running machine right now listening to this going, did I choose the right podcast? I really hope you did. I know I'm going to deliver something useful, I promise, if you keep listening. So an expert language trainer delivers good content. An expert language trainer makes the process of language learning fun, whereas it's basically boring. So this woman this morning, she had taken training before, and she had, I don't know if she appreciated the training or not. I'm sure the content was good. I'm sure the person she did the training with was nice. I'm sure all of those criteria I just talked about were fulfilled. But then she said, yeah, and then, you know, I didn't use it in my job and I didn't really go on holiday to anywhere English. I went to Spanish places and so I forgot it all. And that's just, you know, you can gloss over something like that very easily as a language trainer. But I think today I didn't want to. Today I said to that woman, that's really a shame. You know, I don't want to use the word that I actually thought in my head. I want this to be PC, but that's a shame. That's really a shame. You paid for something, or your company paid for something. The promise of that training was supposed to be, we will, for example, help you to write emails better in your job, help you to communicate better on the phone, help you to communicate better when there's visitors to the company. You know, that's a typical training program here where I work in France. You know, we don't do a lot of this maintenance training. We don't do a lot of, you have 1 hour a week with me forever and we'll just keep your level and, you know, generally improve your level. Here in France, normally it's like 40 hours. You're going to do 10 hours on this module about meetings, 10 hours on this module about presenting your product, and then 10 minutes on this module about welcoming a visitor, depending on the level, you know, whatever. That's what we do here. So she was delivered something about like that, which in theory is what all training should be doing, whether it's maintenance training or not. If you're getting someone to pay you to come and train them, there must be some sort of promise. At least periodically, you could say, okay, you're gonna have 1 hour a week with me forever, but every month we're gonna set a target. Every month we're gonna say, this month you've got a lot of meetings with clients from China, and so we're gonna really focus on the Chinese accent this month and meeting language. And by the end of the month, then we'll see if that's had any impact on your meetings with your clients. And then next month, we'll reevaluate and see what the new thing you're doing is, or maybe it's the same thing again, and we'll just keep working on things. You know, it could be small objectives, it could be grand objectives, but setting objectives means that you as a trainer will know that your training is having an effect, basically that your training is successful. There's the word that we should use, is success. Is your training successful? Because if it's not, which means you're not setting objectives and you're just chatting to that person and generally improving their level, if you can't see my air quotes right now, but that's what I'm doing, then you're not doing successful training. What you're doing, in the definition of, you know, if you look at instructional design, for as an example, of, you know, really defining and setting norms for what training is and what it isn't, you're not doing training, you're not doing professional training, you're doing what they call casual training or informal training. So informal training is just, you know, your colleague needs some help with something, they don't know how to use emails in their new computer, and so you show them how to set it up, and then they learn how to do it, and that's fine. That's informal training. There is an impact, of course, there's an impact in any kind of training, but it's not really measurable, it's not accountable, because you haven't set any particular objectives, you didn't, design the way that they're going to do it, you just generally told them how to do it and hoped that that would have an impact, and then it did or it didn't, you know. But really, really successful training is when you say, like I just explained before, all right, you've got meetings with this person in China. Well, I'm going to give you this video. It's got Chinese accents. Then we're going to talk about the language they use. Then I'm going to get you to use that language. And then in a week's time, I'm going to check that you remember how to use that language by doing a role play. Then I want you to use that in your next meeting with your clients. And I want you to come back to me and tell me either that you used it and how it went, or that you've recorded, for example, part of the meeting where you used that language and play it to me. And then we can see that you really used it. And you just keep checking throughout that whole month that that objective is being realized. And at the end of that month, you can say, yeah, okay, we set this objective. It was very clear and measurable and specific and whatever, smart objective. By the end of the month, I can tell you that that was really achieved because look at all this evidence that I have. And so you empirically can say, yeah, the thing that I told you I would do and you paid me to do, I was successful. Look, you can show them, you know, that's successful training. So when this woman this morning told me, I forgot everything, that's failed training, because you delivered content, it was fun, it was nice, she appreciated it, but then when she went back to her job, she didn't use it. When she went on holiday, she didn't use it, and she forgot it all. If you're an expert language trainer, you understand the process of memorization. So you understand that when we learn something new, if we don't apply it, and there isn't some sort of plan to apply it somehow, it will just disappear. You can learn a new word today in Chinese and remember it today, and I'll ask you again about it tomorrow, you'll forget, probably. It's just how memorization works. Unless you practice, unless you go away and practice. You know, if you artificially practice like you do on, you know, applications like Duolingo or Babbel or whatever, you artificially practice, memorize, you know, artificially you learn the word just by remembering it, then you can remember it for a certain amount of time. And if you practice it again and again, then you can remember it for longer. But you're at the mercy of the very, very basic way to remember something, which is just to remember it. You're at the mercy of, say I give you a new credit card, and I say your new credit card number is 6802. Remember that, 6802. Can you remember it? Yeah, 6802. Okay, tell me it. Yeah, 6802. 10 minutes later, do you remember that number? Was it 6802? Yeah, okay, 6802. And then maybe 30 minutes later, you might remember. This is that very, very simple, basic way of remembering something that doesn't bring in any other variables to strengthen memorization. Then you will have a really, you know, you're going to spend your life trying to remember that combination of numbers. Now, if I tell you, okay, it's 6802, here's a credit card reader, type it in, 6802. All right, type it in again, 6802. Type it in one more time, 6802. Then I bet you in an hour's time, if I have two people, and one of them I've done the card reader physical task with, and the other one I've just told them the number, I bet you, I could bet you any money that the person who's done the physical, and you know that you know it as well, the person who's done the physical activity will definitely remember that more easily. Because when I say to that person who's done the card reader thing, all right, what was that number for the credit card? They're going to go six, and their finger will go either to the card reader or in their hand and type up, up, up on their palm the sequence of numbers. And in their brain, they'll see visually, they'll visualize the card reader on their hand and they'll see 6802. It was 6802. Yeah, because you've added another variable to that memory. You've added that physical interaction, right? I'm not going to get into the talk of visual audio kinesthetic because that's been essentially debunked. Obviously, the more variables, emotionally, physically, sensory variables you add to a memory, increase its memorization. So I'll give you an example. When I first started teaching, I was teaching kids in England. I was teaching kids in a summer camp. And I remember there were Chinese kids, and I remember there were Russian kids, and I remember there were Italian kids. Now, since that summer camp 10 years ago, I have not once spoken Chinese or Russian. I've never practiced Chinese or Russian. I've never met anybody who wanted to speak with me in Chinese or Russian. I've never been there, never had a scenario where it was necessary. But I still remember today the Chinese expression for come here and the Russian bad word that a lot of Russian people use when they're angry. I'm not going to repeat it, but I learned these words because the bad word was what the kids were using in class when I was telling them to do activities. And I picked up on it and I thought, what does that word mean? And I asked somebody else who knew Russian and they were like, oh, it's a really bad word. So I started then picking up on that word when I heard it in the class, and I'd be like, hey, 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 don't use that word. And they were like, how does this guy know how to speak Russian? And they were totally freaked out. So that was very, for me, it was emotional because it was funny, it was exciting, it was, you know, I had a certain sense of pride that I was able to trick these kids and to make them stop using bad words in the class. Like, it doesn't really matter, but, you know, I bet for their parents it would. And for the Chinese kids come here because they were often in big groups, and it would be really important when we're out on excursions to tell them to come, because they would be like wandering all over the place, getting in trouble. So I learned the Chinese expression to come here because I got one of them to teach me. And I can still remember it today. 10 years, I remember. Because at that time, learning the expression come here was for me to stop kids from dying. Can you imagine a more intrinsic reason to use language? Can you imagine more fundamentally important variables to remembering a word than stopping somebody else from dying? If all of your language training could be used in the context of stopping someone from dying, I'm telling you, you'd be getting people to remember stuff. Let's just put it that way. So obviously that's not possible. It's an example, it's an anecdote to tell you the more fundamentally important variables you add to the stuff you're teaching, the more it will be remembered. So being nice, being friendly, having a nice social conversation with someone is one thing. It's not enough. Clearly, as this lady this morning showed, it's not enough to get someone to remember something for a long time. You need more than that. You need to inject, as an expert language trainer, you have to inject more variables, more sensory variables into the things that you're doing. So either your activities are a bit more lively or physical or with, you know, video stuff or whatever, maybe really sort of intense topics. Like, I just released some free lesson plans on LinkedIn recently, and the topics were really extreme. It was like the Me Too movement and sexual harassment. And the other topic was, what was it? How to be nice to other people, how to help other people. So it was really quite fundamental and quite emotional topics. So if the topic can be really emotional, that could also help somebody remember more easily, for example. But in this case with this lady, my advice to the person who gave her the training would be, you didn't find a way for her to use it outside class. What they would say is, yeah, but she doesn't use it in her job and she wasn't going on holiday. What am I supposed to do? I say, well, there are other ways that people practice language today. You could have signed her up, for example, to polyglotclub.com or one of those millions of websites on the internet today that offers free exchange partnering between foreign language speakers. So, you know, this is a French woman who speaks Spanish. Cool. Find somebody on the internet who speaks English and who wants to learn Spanish or French. Pair them up. You can do this as well. You can, I mean, if you want to really take responsibility for making sure your training has an impact, sit with her in class time and say, right, today we're going to speak English, and the activity will be to find you a pen pal, sign them up, send them a message, and in the next class we'll see what they said in their reply. You know, you follow up and you make sure, you have to hold their hand and make sure that the system you're putting in place is going to be used. That it's going to be effective, that it's going to correspond to the training. So, okay, is it okay with this person? Yeah, they're a business person. So you could talk to them about this business language that we're doing, maybe ask them how their most recent meeting was. You know, did they use the language that you just learned? Or, you know, find a way that they could apply it. Would they be interested in doing role plays with you? You do a role play in French with them, they do a role play in English with you, and you make the role plays based on, you know, I can give you the role play. I'll give you some role play cards and just go away and use them. One every week. Have a call with this guy for an hour. You do half an hour in French, half an hour in English, and then you practice, right? So that would be a way that lady would have really got a lot more out of that training than what she got. Essentially, she got nothing out of that training. She wasted a time of her life. She maybe wasted 20 hours of her life because the training wasn't well designed, because the trainer wasn't an expert language trainer. They weren't considering impact. They weren't considering what this person will do to apply the training. Or they didn't think it was their responsibility. Well, if you don't think it's your responsibility to do that, you have to tell this person, no, I can't train you because I'm not going to take responsibility for the fact that you're not going to use it. If you tell me you're not going to use it in your job and you're not going to use it in your work, you're not going to in your holidays, you're not going to use it yourself, I can't be responsible for that. I'm not going to take on responsibility. I can't train you. And you have to let that person go. Because you can't train someone knowing that they're going to waste their time and they're not going to use the language you're giving them after the training. It's just really irresponsible. And you're wasting someone's time and money. You're taking somebody's money to do nothing. Yeah. You say, yeah, but it's their own money. They can do what they want. If they're wasting it, they're wasting it. If they go to the gym and they pay a subscription, they do some training and then they don't come back the next month, nothing will happen. They're not going to be fit. They're not going to be healthy. That's their problem. Yeah, okay, it's their problem. But you have a responsibility to inform people, you can do training with me, but it's not going to work. And I would really highly recommend that you don't do it. Unless you want to accept that I'm going to help you find a pen pal, I'm going to help you find a way of doing conversational exchanges, or, you know, find you a colleague in your office who can help you, who can work on your language with you. Maybe it's a colleague from another country who would be very happy to make a friend in the office because they don't speak French. They'd be really happy to make a friend who speaks English. You know, Dutch colleague in the French office who doesn't speak that French that well, who'd be really happy to make a new friend and have lunch with you once a week, spend 45 minutes chatting in English, something like that, you know. It's part of our responsibility. So that, I think that's the conclusion this morning is, this morning, it's probably not morning where you are. It's just this morning here right now, is you as an expert language trainer are responsible, not just for the content you deliver, not just for how nice your classes are, how well the learner appreciates your classes and the content of your training program, but you're responsible for setting clear objectives. And you're responsible for making sure that those objectives will actually endure. So after the objective is achieved at the end of the training, you've got something in place that will keep that going, that will endure, that will help that what you've achieved endure. So you're responsible for setting that up with that person. If they use it already in their jobs, great. You don't have anything to do. Just make sure they're using it in their job. Maybe even ask them, okay, you are using it in your job, great. Well, can you bring me a recording of one time when you used it in your job? Can you record yourself next time? Can you write down a summary afterwards if you're not allowed to record it because it's a private meeting or whatever? Could you write down a summary and bring it to me? You know, engage yourself to engage the learner to be sure that what they're doing outside of your class is actually having an impact, is actually being done, is having an impact, is changing the way that they, you know, that what you've trained them to do is change the way that they behave in their jobs. So, you know, you have to really think about this. The whole system is part of your training offer, not just the content you deliver, the whole way that it's going to be used and how it's going to have an impact on that person's life. So I'll put some useful links in the description of the podcast, and I hope this has been useful for you, and I hope to see you again in the next episode. Thanks. Thanks for checking out this podcast, and if you want to know more, please follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. All the links are in the description. I really look forward to seeing you in the next episode.